Thank you. So to transition, for those of you who are interested in the federal issue, we'll have a panel today at 1 p.m. that will cover that in detail. So during the Q&A, I ask that you don't ask any questions about the current administration because it's not going to be productive for this conversation. But transitioning back to California and our happy place where our regulators care about us and want to learn about us, what are the top level things a new business owner needs to know about the state of California regulations and laws before proceeding, from your view, Luke?
Yeah, so again, it's kind of thematic here, I mean, being a regulatory panel, that you really seek understanding of, in California, we're in a very interesting place where we've got, this complex amalgamation of different rules from the Compassionate Use Act in 1996 to the Medical Marijuana Program Act in 2003, Attorney General Guidelines in 2008, and everything else that has happened since then. To the point where in 2015 we then passed historic medical legislation, in 2016 we passed historic recreational legislation, and we are existing in a little bit of a middle ground where if you're a business, from a regulatory and compliance perspective, you've got to look back at the last 20 years of complex rules and case law and follow those rules to the best of your ability while you have wonderful regulators who want to understand what it is that you need and are trying to write the rules so that you can operate businesses in the future. But it really is critical to understand the past, the sort of present gray area, and then, what the upcoming future of regulation is going to be. And it's difficult for business people because there's always the constant sort of push-pull between business and regulation, right? I think the best thing that you can do as a business in California right now is show the people who are going to be looking at your application someday that you're interested in following the rules and that you can follow the rules and establish a history of following the rules so that when you come to them with a packet asking to be licensed to continue to do business in the future, they've got a track record and they don't have to go on, trusting some unknown personality and some unknown entity. That they're going to follow the rules and that they're not going to have to chase them around and undergo enforcement and, make life difficult for everybody in the industry. So it's a struggle because you're kind of walking the tightrope between falling off by failing the regulatory and compliance side and incurring civil or criminal liability on the one side. And on the other side, the way a lot of business owners look at it as, this is my time to gather market share, and if I don't get some market share right now, I'm never going to be able to have a business. So you don't want to fall off on that side of the tightrope by not taking, from a business perspective, a little bit of risk and trying to get established and put yourself into the marketplace. So I think that's sort of the critical struggle. And so, as Amber mentioned, one of the important things is continuing to be flexible. So what we do for everybody that we work with right now is try to inject a lot of flexibility into, corporate structure and everything else that we're doing so that you can stay compliant currently. And then when we do have new rules and we do understand what the parameters are, we can quickly make the changes and efficiently and effectively make the changes that are needed to follow the rules going forward. I think that's critical in California.
Great. I'm going to skip around a little bit in my line of questioning because one thing that has come up in terms of following the rules is that, as our regulators pointed out, I believe it was Ms. Morris, you have to have a local license under medical to even apply for the state license. And if you've been following some of our local jurisdictions throughout the last 2 years, you've seen counties and cities go from allowing and banning, allowing and banning. You've got a sheriff in Mendocino County saying, it's Randy's law that applies to the cultivators in my state. And so in terms of that tightrope, you look at Los Angeles right now. Los Angeles hasn't authorized anything beyond its existing about 190 or so businesses. So how has this slow march to local regulation impacted your clients and their businesses? And what are you doing to perhaps help them move that process forward with a measure M as in Mary versus measure N as in Nancy Reagan on the Los Angeles ballot in March?
Yeah, so I mean, this is a challenge all over the state, obviously, right now. I think it's going to continue to be a challenge for years. Speaking to local officials, many of them feel like they were already very much underwater and trying to swim towards the surface with MCRSA. And then when Prop 64 and AUMA passed just here in November, they feel like somebody grabbed their head and dunked them about 10 feet further under. Northern California, I think, is significantly ahead of Southern California in terms of the move towards a regulated marketplace. Los Angeles, for instance, which, you know, greater LA County area, is about 10 million people. It's twice the size of Colorado. It's a huge consumer market, and we have, as Sunshine mentioned, only a couple hundred businesses that, A, are not actually licensed or permitted, so you don't get those critical rights that go along with that, the two main ones being the constitutional due process rights of notice and a hearing before that license is taken away. The way that the law exists all throughout LA County basically at the moment, and that's changing city by city, but there's 88 cities in LA County, including city of LA, is as an affirmative defense, the same way it exists at the state level. All you have is a limited immunity from prosecution. And frankly, that's been crippling towards the industry. It allows, you know, black market operators and gray market operators to sort of continue to make regulation difficult, which makes the city continue to hesitate more and more and more, and just it constrains the marketplace. It doesn't allow for transparency. The city likes it because they feel like they've, you know, keep control over everybody, and they don't have to go through these due process constitutional things with anybody they want to get rid of. They just go in and arrest them. But, you know, that's not where we're going in the future. Luckily we do have a municipal election in LA coming up, as Sunshine mentioned, and there are two measures on the ballot. I think the one that the city propounded and is most likely to pass is called Measure M, and it basically just establishes a tax rate of 5%, which is lower than what it is now, on businesses in the city of LA, and then gives the city council the ability to write local rules and regulations that are going to allow for real permitting, real licensing, real businesses. Clarity, to Hezekiah's point, we got the same thing locally that we're dealing with at the state level. You know, let's give people some rules to follow, and let's let the people who, you know, want to get in line and follow those rules and be part of the regulated marketplace do that. And so hopefully in Southern California here, we can catch up to the way that things are done a little more widely and a little better, in my opinion, here in Northern California these days.
Awesome. Wonderful. So my final question is, in terms of helping your clients build out a business in a way that will be sustainable, but also maybe will be sort of anticipate some regulation that will be coming down, are you looking at any other states as a model for California businesses, and why or why not?
You know, we've looked at some other states and been through the licensing process in some other states. The challenge, I think, with California is that we are such a giant market. We are such a diverse market, geographically, culturally, socially, and in so many ways. And the problem becomes so much more complex that I certainly am following much more so than I am, what anybody's done in, you know, Colorado or Washington or Oregon. I mean, I do think it's important to, you know, learn those lessons, but, we're looking much more closely at what the other people on this panel are doing and trying to really, you know, keep our eye on the ball here in California. You know, yes, take some good lessons, but, focus on what's going on here. It's a complex problem, and I think that California people are going to be the best people to craft that policy. So that's really what we're looking at more so.
Absolutely. We have a 20-year industry here, so inventing from outside doesn't necessarily make any sense at times. Hezekiah, I think you had a comment that you wanted to we had some responses, and then we'll open up to general questioning.
For new entrants into the California marketplace and industry, we built this on resistance. It was tempered with compassion, and your private interests are not the end of the game here. And if you want to succeed, remember that our communities and our natural resources have to be on par with your private interests.
So if no one has any follow-up that they want to add for clarity, I think we can open up to questions from the audience. You've been sitting really patiently.
All right. So I know that there's a million questions. I'm going to do my best to get to everybody. We're going to start here. We're going to work with it.
Lightning round.
So real quick, just for Lori and then one for Hezekiah. I know you mentioned that there's going to be differences put forward for the legislation between MCRSA and AMA about distribution specifically. I was just wondering if you could talk about that Senate bill at all that just been introduced to clarify the differences between MCRSA and AMA distribution. And then Hezekiah, I was wondering, I saw you speak at the Senate committee, and I know that your groups are very, difference on opinion on that, on the distribution. But for me, for MCRSA, I was under the impression that it was to hold one entity responsible for diversion. So if you could go over maybe why MCRSA was made separate versus in AMA, where you're allowed to be vertically integrated so that you can be your own distributor and your own transporter on the smaller scale farmer. I know that on the large scale that you're not allowed to. Thank you.
So I'll start. We don't really comment on legislation that's currently being introduced. We provide technical assistance for the legislature, so we don't take... We want it to be clear, too, by the way. I think that makes our job easy as regulators if we know what model we're going to do. But just to, we've always looked at the distributor as that quality control agent. I think I don't disagree that helps with diversion, but I think it's the track and trace that from tracking from plant all the way to sale and everybody making sure all our licensees are entering in the data they need into track and trace and making sure it's transparent and everybody can see what's happening, I think is going to help with diversion, along with having strong regulations that are very clear and simple to understand. I'm going to tell you, I don't want regulations where you guys are looking at them and I am and going, how do we comply with this? You should be able to read it and go, okay, I know how to comply with this. It's pretty simple. So we're trying to accomplish that. So I do believe the distributor is important for that quality control piece, and then I think it's important for all of you to weigh in on that piece on what distribution model fits your business.
Frantically searching for the Senate bill that you referenced. I can't find a bill yet. There are about 9 new bills that were across the desk and introduced today, though, I'm discovering. So there will be legislation to deal with this question. I'll just give you the background from my perspective. The independent distributor exists most simply. The rationale for the concept was efficiency of audits. There needed to be a control point in the supply chain. It's a disordered marketplace with no clear structure. And in order to achieve efficient audits, the original idea was to limit the number of cultivation licenses. We rejected that, and so the control point moved down. QAQC audits for public health and the Bureau for consumer safety, tax audits for the Board of Equalization, and then inventory control and supply chain integrity audits coming from CHP law enforcement. So those were the three groups that ultimately brought the distributor model to the table. And, it took us a while to get to a compromised position on it.
And there'll be more on distribution at 11 a.m.